The bit of Mark's gospel we just heard is often known as the little apocalypse. Little, as opposed to the big apocalypse known as the Revelation of St. John. Apocalyptic language tends to make us uneasy, uncomfortable. We don't like to think about wars and famines and buildings falling down. We don't like to think about the destruction of the world. It's frightening to us, and we don't like to be frightened. But Christianity is an apocalyptic faith. It is a faith which preaches the end of the world as we know it and the beginning of a new one. In today's gospel, Jesus predicts the destruction of the Jerusalem temple. And along with that, wars and rumors of wars. Scholars date this gospel, this Markan gospel, to just about the time the second temple of Jerusalem was destroyed, around 70 of the Common Era. It's either written right before it or not long after it. So it is either a description of what happened or a reference to it, or written out of the anxiety of Jews and Christians feeling the grip of Roman power strengthening around them, knowing that something was going to happen. The temple that was destroyed, the temple that Jesus speaks about, was central to Jewish identity and faith. It was where people came in contact with the divine. And it was understood to literally be the seat of God's name. It was the place where people offered sacrifices of penance for things done wrong, sacrifices of thanksgiving for blessings of their lives. And it was the destination for pilgrims from around the Jewish world. It was the ultimate liminal space where divine and human met. The centrality of this temple is still obvious in Jerusalem of today. The size of the noble sanctuary, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, topped by the Dome of the Rock, the place where the temple once stood, well, it is massive. And when you compare it to the rest of the old city of Jerusalem, you see just how central this place was. Contemporary Judaism's devotion at the Western Wall continues to speak to that centrality in the rich Jewish tradition. At the time of Jesus, though, the centrality of the temple was not simply a religious one. It was also an economic one. The temple was the economic engine of Jerusalem and its environs. Not only did the temple itself employ many, many people, many more than the priests and the scribes, but think about all the people to keep it clean, to repair it, to carry out the menial tasks in it. But the pilgrimages made to Jerusalem from around the world supported countless other lives and jobs in the area. But with any such economic engine, any such monopolistic power, there's always a dark side. And at the temple in Jerusalem, corruption was a major issue. The temple elites were profiting off the offerings of the poor. Today's reading is preceded by examples and references to this. Jesus overturning the tables of the money changers who were making a profit off changing Roman coin into that which could be accepted in the temple. Or Jesus condemning the scribes, wealthy leaders who profited off of religious devotion. Corruption also took another, even darker form, complicity in the Roman occupation. The priests benefited financially from the occupation, and they also gained power and prestige. The chief priest served as a type of go-between for Roman authorities and the Jewish people. This corruption was so rampant that we can read most of Jesus' time in Jerusalem from his entry in chapter 11 through till this reading. We can read it as a condemnation of what the temple had become. Those who were called to help people in their relationship to the divine, well, they became more interested in self-glory, in power, in wealth. Those who were to serve God were serving themselves and doing so in the name of faith. For if you didn't follow the rules they interpreted, then you were not a good Jew. Fear and greed dominated a place where hope and generosity should have. Religious leaders who use fear to control others is a common refrain in the human narrative. And these days we see it in the work of Daesh or ISIL or ISIS or the Caliphate or whatever you'd like to call it. A core group of leaders are using fear of divine retribution to control armies of fighters, to control people who they rule. But make no mistake, this is not about faith in the divine. It is about power and control and wealth. It is about a few using many to further their own greed for money, power, and strength. Currently, Daesh is feeding off the fear and hopelessness felt by some young Muslims. These young Muslims feel disconnected from society. They feel excluded from economic prosperity. They cannot find work. They feel out of place in Western society. They feel lost. And Daesh's leaders draw them in. They promise these young people meaning in their lives, and they promise them a divine reward for their sacrifice. But in truth, ISIS is simply taking these young people's lives and the lives of so many more and using them for the greed of a few. It isn't faith, it is greed. And it is greed at the heart of the evil. In light of what we have seen in recent days in Paris and Beirut, and recent months and years in other places, it would be easy for us to succumb to fear. Fear is comfortable. Fear gives us an excuse to build up the walls around us. Fear gives us a reason to turn inwards. But in the words of one of my favorite theological works, Frank Herbert's sci-fi masterpiece, Dune, in Herbert's words, fear is the mind killer. In our faith is built upon the opposition of fear. And I might add, so is the true heart of Islam, the heart of Judaism, and so many other of the major faith traditions in our world. In the Christian story, when the angels appear to the shepherd outside Bethlehem to announce the birth of Jesus, they tell them not to fear. When the strangers meet the women at the empty tomb on the morning of the resurrection, they tell the women, "Do not be afraid." In opposition to fear, there are two other intimately and intricately connected human responses. The first is hope. We hope for a better world. We hope for it because we know it is being born. We hope for a better future because we want those who come after us to live without pain and suffering. And the other human response is generosity. A friend of mine, Charles LaFond, who is canon steward at St. John's Cathedral in Denver, Charles once said to me, "People are not greedy. People are afraid." And people who are afraid hold on to what they have as a means of screaming in fear. To reject fear and greed is to live in hope and to live generously. And the apocalyptic teaching of Jesus is just that. Be not afraid. The world is changing. There will be pain. There will be suffering. But something new is being born, and the current suffering are simply birth pangs. In the midst of all of what we have seen and watched on the news in the last few days, here at St. Francis and at churches around the Episcopal Church, people are using this day to make their commitments. Commitments to God's mission and ministry through their parishes and through the Episcopal Church and our partners around the world. Our commitments informs of ourselves, who we are and what we have. And this isn't simply about paying bills. We set no goal. We set no amount for us to reach. Instead, this is about being the parish God is calling us to be. A parish of hope. A parish of welcome. A parish that respects the dignity of every human being. A parish living out of hope and generosity. Over the last few weeks, you have heard people tell their stories of God's acting in their lives to this community of faith. You have heard people give their response to the generosity God, the giver, has given them. And what we are asking you to do is to respond out of that generosity. To respond recognizing that all we are and all we have are God's gifts entrusted to us, intended for us to share with the world. In a few minutes, we will place our pledge cards on the altar. These pledge cards are simply symbols. They are symbols of what we will give next year. They are symbols of our work, the work of our hands, the sweat of our brow, the passion of our hearts. They are symbols of us giving ourselves here as we create glimpses, glimmers of the kingdom of God that is being born. And as we do this, as we place these on the altar and bless them, let us do so out of hope and not fear. Let us do so generously and not fearfully. The world is not yet perfected, but that redemption is in process. And we, living with hope and generosity, well, we are called to join in and build it anew.